Hello everyone, this is Professor Reena Pujara, having an industry experience of 6 years and 6 years into teaching. The Employees Provident Fund and Miscellaneous Provisions under this Act 1952 talks about the economic security of any worker, employee working in an industry. Now, when we talk about, say, the wages and salaries which are being drawn by this lower class of employees, workers in the industry, and if they have to, you know, meet upon any expenses, they do not have inculcate the saving habits, and to inculcate the saving habits and help them to meet up such upcoming expenses, or maybe to plan, after their retirement, this act came into force. So, basic objective of this act is to provide economic security of an employee or a worker when he is working in an industry, when he is a part of workforce, and also to ensure that he can have a sustainable life even after he retires. Object of the act was passed with a view to making some provisions for the future of the industrial worker after his retirement or for his dependents in case of his early death, and inculcating the habit of saving among the workers. So we identify the three basic reasons or objective of this act is, of course, to inculcate saving habits among this lower class of workers, because already, you know, the salary wages drawn by them are very low. And in this, they are not able to save money on regular basis. But if we have a mandatory clause of, you know, deducting some amount regularly from their wages and salaries, this will result into a compulsory saving habit among employees, which will help them to, you know, cope up with the expenses and their livelihoods after the retirement. Because here we are talking about those class of people who may not have those big amounts of money in their bank, which will help them to cope up with this situation. So these small savings every month from the salary and wages of employee will secure their future. Not only that, but if a particular worker or employee meets with death, and it will also help the dependent to overcome the economic loss. Definitely we cannot compensate to the emotional loss. They will already be on upheaval of having an emotional up and down. But at the same time, they have to face a great economic loss. And in case if the worker is a single source of earning, there may be a total turnaround. So to help and to overcome situations of their dependent, this particular lump sum amount will also help them to cope up with this situation. So with these primary objectives, this act was implemented. The object of the act is to provide substantial security and timely monetary assistance to industrial employees and their families when they are in distress or unable to meet family and social obligations, and to protect them in old age, disablement, early death of the breadwinner, and in some other contingencies. So when we are talking about contingencies, this lump sum amount can also be used when you have certain obligations to be met. Now, say for example, during the weddings, or say for higher education of children, a lump sum amount is required. So against the PF contribution the employee worker making every month, he can draw a loan against the PF contributions, and he can take it interestless. That means it is his own amount, but then he has to pay it back without any interest. And there are other provisions which are helping the employee to cope up or to come up under the contingent situation. The Provident Fund and Miscellaneous Provisions Act 1952 is applicable from the date of functioning or date of setup of establishment, provided factory establishment employed 20 or more person. So here we come to know that it is applicable to those factories and those establishment wherein there are more than 20 or more person employed in an establishment, and it will be effective to be implemented. It will come into force as soon as the operations of the establishment has been started. The Act, however, does not apply to cooperative societies employing less than 50%. So, first of all, there are some variations when it comes to normal establishments, which are, towards the primary objective of profit maximization. But when we talk about cooperatives, their primary objective is to serve the society. Then basically the secondary objective of them is to earn profits. But the primary objective is to help the society, to help, the related members of this cooperative society. So your when the primary objective is not profit maximization, they are being relieved to 50 of the members or employees working in the cooperatives. So if the number goes beyond 50, even they are under the PF Act. The central government is empowered to apply the provisions of this Act to any establishments employing less than 20% after giving not less than 2 months notice of its intention to do so by a notification in official gazette. So here it says that though the Act is applied only on establishments or factories who are hiring 20 or more number of employees, but in any due course of time, if the central government feels so that they want to implement this Act in such establishments and factories where there are less than 20 people employed, then they can do it any time by giving a prior notice. Mentioned here is 2 months prior, and they can implement this Act in those organizations also. According to the definition, what do we mean by employer? In relation to an establishment which is a factory, the owner or occupier of the factory. So when we are talking about factory, if this Act has to be implemented in factory, employer is also supposed to make some contributions towards this provident fund. That means this fund will be created by contributions made by employer and employee. So it is important to understand who is actually an employer. So when we are talking about factories, factories are generally places where manufacturing and production generally takes place. So occupier or the main owner of the factory is considered to be an employer. In this case, the occupier or the owner is going to hire employees to work in their factories. So he will be considered as an employer, including the agent of such owner or occupier, the legal representative of a deceased owner or occupier. So in case, say for example, any factory was established many years back by a particular person and now he is no more. So there will be definitely some representatives who will be looking after the factory. So in that case, the representatives or the person who is looking after to the day-to-day affairs of factory and who is enjoying the profits that are coming out of this factory will be considered as employer. In the third case, any agent. So when we are talking about agent or any third party is considered to be an employer. If any third party is responsible to appoint such employees, he will be considered as employer. The legal representative of deceased owner or occupier and where a person has been named as a manager. So if there are no direct representatives, now say the owner or the occupier of the factory has many other operations, okay, and he has kept official person or official authorized person to look after the factory, and that is known as manager. Manager means he will be responsible to take care of that factory in absence of the occupier or owner or the representatives of occupier or owner. So in this case, manager will become the employer because because employee will see the face of managers as the management, and they are not directly related to the management or the owner of the factory. So in this case, manager is deemed to be the main employer of the employees or workers. Factory under clause subsection F of subsection 1 of section 7 of the Factories Act 1948, the person so named. And in relation to any other establishment, the person who or the authority which has the ultimate control over the affairs of the establishment. Now when we talk about say the three criteria we have discussed, over and above, any person who is looking or taking care of that factory and who has authority to take decisions in the factory and who has the ultimate power to operate that factory will become the employer. And where the said affairs are entrusted to a manager, managing director or managing agent, such manager, managing director or managing agent will be called as employer. Now let's come to the definition of employee. Who is an employee? We have understood the different criteria which will define who is employer. Employee means any person who is employed for wages in any kind of work. Now any kind of work, it may be unskilled, semi-skilled or skilled, and he is being paid or remunerated in terms of wages, manual or otherwise. That may be manual. That means it may be labor intensive. Now say for example, beady making industries. So that is more of labor intensive, whether it be on some machinery or otherwise, in or in connection with the work of an establishment, and who gets his wages directly or indirectly from the employer, and includes any person. That means the wages can be paid directly by the employer and maybe through a third party that we have spoken as contractor. So even the third party contractor who is paying wages to the laborers, so here we are considering them as employer. Employed by or through a contractor in or in connection with the work of the establishment. Now directly we have we can take an example of L&T. L&T may be hiring workers on his own payroll, the company's payroll, who may be working inside the establishment, but then they have some projects to be taken care of which are outside the establishment, and for which they have hired contractors who will further hire laborers for them. So if the work is not taken care in the establishment, but say for example on some site, so that may be indirectly in relation with the work of establishment. Engaged as an apprentice, not being an apprentice engaged under the Apprentice Act 1961 or under the standing orders of establishment. So here the act also covers the apprentice who are working in the establishment. The Employees Provident Fund and Miscellaneous Provisions Act provides for three schemes. Now when we are talking about Provident Fund, so though the contribution made by employer and employee together creates this fund, but out of this fund there are various schemes. That is, one is definitely the main scheme of Provident Fund, then is Pension Fund. So generally when we talk about Pension Fund, we realize that this fund can be utilized only after the age of retirement. Then the Employee Deposit Linked Insurance Scheme. So when the word insurance comes, here we come to know that the benefit arising out of this scheme will be more of medical in nature. The Act stipulates statutory contribution to the Provident Fund by the employees and employer. So when we talk about statutory contribution, the rate of contribution is well defined and it is bounding on any employer. Already we have defined what is an employer and what type of establishments will be covered under this. So statutory, it is compulsory for both, not only employer but for the employee, to make regular contributions to this scheme. A compulsory pension scheme for all Provident Fund subscribers. So once an employee enters into the Provident Fund scheme, automatically he or she becomes the member of pension scheme, because out of the fund provident fund, some amount is, you know, transferred to the pension scheme account. So automatically any employee or worker who is part of provident fund scheme becomes a member of pension scheme as well. A deposit linked insurance scheme in which only employers are required to pay contribution at a specified rate to the fund. And talking further about the deposit linked insurance scheme, the contributions here are not paid by both the parties, only employer is contributed a stipulated rate which is being well defined. All the three schemes are administered by the Central Board of Trustees. So it is handled on a statutory level and on the central level authorities are being set up to look after this particular funds, pension scheme and deposit schemes. The Central PF Commissioner is the Chief Executive Officer of the Employees Provident Fund Organization. So talking about the Employees Provident Fund Organization, Central PF Commissioner acts as a CEO of this organization. Organization and Secretary to the Central Board of Trustees, and he will act as a Secretary to the Central Board of Trustees as well as taking care of the independent organization EPFO. EPF scheme 1952, the growth and welfare of a nation is closely related to the welfare of its citizens, and the strength of a company organization lies in its employees. So it is interrelated. When we talk about good healthy relationships between employer and employee, happy workforce, it is only possible through satisfied workforce. So somewhere overall nation need a scheme or act which indeed are helpful to make a happy workforce, efficient and a productive workforce, which in turn will help us to maximize the profit. So its overall concept is to secure the employees not only while working but also by the retirement period. A satisfied workforce has the ability to propel an organization to newer heights, helping them achieve greatness. One way to motivate employees is to offer them peace of mind regarding their future. A future where the financial needs could outweigh personal goals and ambitions. That means now when we are talking about happy workforce, one way could be to motivate them. And one way to motivate them is to provide financial securities, and that financial securities are related to their future needs. So when we are implementing such an act or such a contribution pattern or a saving pattern, inculcating the saving habits among the employees and workers, he is a bit relieved about, you know, the financial needs that are going to arise in future. The EPF scheme was established with this idea in mind to offer social security and benefits to the millions of employees who put in their blood, sweat and tears for the betterment of the company. That means when we are talking about profit maximization or the overall effort, so much hard work these employees are putting up to grow their organizations and take them to newer heights. So somewhere they should be also compensated, some share of profit should be shared with this type of employees and workers. So irrelative of, the different class, whether they are skilled, unskilled, whatever region, whatever culture they belong to. So this particular right the right to share the profits and share the prosperity indeed. So here some employer contribution is also made compulsory. India, being a welfare state, strives to provide its citizens certain rights and privileges designed to enhance their quality of life. The directive principles of state policy put the onus on the government to make certain provisions towards its people, including social security. So not taking at industrial aspect of it, if we take it as a country as a whole. It is a responsibility of government to protect their people, provide them some social security. And majority of the people are part of workforce. So directly or indirectly, you know, inculcating the saving habits, providing them social security will also lead to national prosperity. It was with this intention that the government set up a statutory body, the Employees Provident Fund Organization, which monitors and administers the Provident Fund scheme, insurance scheme and pension scheme. So these three schemes are somewhere interrelated, and to have a proper planning, implementation of policies and have a proper supervision and control, a statutory body is being created, and that is called as Employees Provident Fund Organization, as we have discussed. And the commissioner acts as a CEO of this organization, who will take care of timely amendments which need to make this policy better with the central advisory board. Provident Fund Scheme of 1952 acts as a backdrop for the government to enforce certain policies, with the Ministry of Labour and Employment in charge of its implementation. So not only the central government, but here a certain delegation of responsibility is being passed on to Ministry of Labour and Employment in charge of its implementation. That means the implementation of such policies which are planned at a central level, but effective implementation of policy is only possible when it is being delegated. Physical applicability of scheme. The EPF scheme is enforceable throughout the territory of India except the state of Jammu and Kashmir. This particular act is applicable to all establishments who fall under this act, but the exceptions are the state of Jammu and Kashmir. Rest all states are covered under this act. This ensures that every eligible individual is covered by the scheme regardless of his or her domicile or place of work, making it an inclusive scheme. So whether the person who resides in any state, any territory, whether it be its hometown or any other place or any other religion, irrespective of all that, type of work, place of work, irrespective of all that, these contributions are being made and a social objective is being created to help all kind of workforce. The eligibility criteria. The provisions of Employees Provident Fund Scheme are applicable to the following categories of organization. An organization which is involved in activity mentioned under Schedule 1 of this Act. So, who all are the organizations or establishments which will be covered under this Act? So, minimum number of people that we have discussed, that is 20. Apart from that, what will be the nature of that establishment which will be covered under this Act? So, that all is being listed in the Schedule 1 of this Act. A company which employs more than 20 people, as we have discussed this. A cinema theater which employs more than 5 people. So, here there are some alterations in the Act with respect to the type of industry. So when we talk about an entertainment industry and it is restricted to cinema, even if they are employing 5 people, this Act will be applicable. Cover offered by Employees Provident Fund Scheme. The Employees Provident Fund Scheme is designed to offer certain benefits to individuals covered under it, taking care of the following needs. That means what all will be covered under this EPF scheme. Medical care and housing. Education of dependents and children, finance of insurance and health policies, family obligations and retirement. So somewhere, by contributing regularly towards this provident fund, somewhere we are taking care of our medical needs when say for their example there is a contingency and medical need arising, we can use this fund. We can use this fund to educate the children. Then we can to meet some family obligations, responsibilities. We can use this fund. And we can use this fund after the retirement. contribution under Employees Provident Fund Scheme. As per the provision of the Employees Provident Fund Scheme, both an employer and an employee are expected to make contributions towards this fund. As we have discussed, this fund will be made up of contributions which is made by employer and employee both. They both together contribute some amount of money every month or regularly in nature, which will accumulate and, you know, will help the worker to use when it is needed or may be used after its retirement through pension scheme. A contribution equivalent to 12% of the basic dearness allowance, retaining allowance and cash component of food allowance need to be made. Now, when we are talking about contributions, it is 12%. 12% not on the total salary, but then some part of the salary. That means it will consider basic dearness allowance, retaining allowance and cash component of food allowance. Need to be made provided this contribution is limited to under ₹6,500 per month. So here they are limiting this amount to ₹6,500 per month. Individuals can choose to enhance their contribution to voluntarily provided both the employee and employer agree for the same. So minimum criteria what they have provided is 12%. But then if we are in a better position to bargain with the employer and if the employer also agrees to give it beyond 12%, that is acceptable. The contribution is lowered to 10% for companies covered before 22nd September 1997 employing under 20 people. So now there are some exceptions wherein it is allowed to go beyond the lower limit, which is set as 12%. But then there are some in the companies which are registered under the Act 22-9-1997, so they will only pay 10%. They are allowed to pay 10%, but voluntarily, as we discussed, if they want to increase the percentage, they can, but then they are allowed to go to 10%. Sick industrial companies, organizations which suffer financial losses equivalent to their net worth and those manufacturing bricks, jute, BD, coir and guar gum products also fall under this category. So now we are talking about those small scale industries who are continuously, you know, in losses. Government are implementing so many policies, turnaround management to overcome, through these losses and make them profitable units. So it is understood that when such small establishments who do not have, you know, that much of profit which can help to, them to contribute towards their employee security. So these type of establishments who are loss making, and what are the criteria of loss making also being defined here, their net worth and those manufacturing. So here the criteria also defines what will be actually a loss making unit. So if it is considered that a particular unit is a loss making unit, then this concessions can be given. An employee can withdraw EPF balance under the following circumstances. That means the fund definitely is for the employee's benefit, for employee security, but then there should be some restrictions upon it, or else, you know, the employee or worker would not mind using these funds very casually. So he can or she can use these funds in the listed areas or listed situations. On retirement from service, an employee should have attained the age of 55 years to be eligible for withdrawal. So here we are thinking that a particular worker or employee wants to withdraw this amount only when he is retired. So at the age of 55 years when he is retired, he can withdraw whole amount. On moving to another country in pursuit of employment or permanent settlement. So if an employer or worker is planning to, you know, move abroad in some other country and for a permanent settlement or going to be employed in some foreign company, then in that case he can withdraw this amount. Talking about employees' pension scheme, Few features of the scheme are employees who are member of EPF will automatically become the member of EPS. So, you know, you don't have to differently register into EPS scheme. Once you are a member of EPF, automatically you become a member of EPS scheme. Some part of contribution is being transferred into EPS scheme. Along with your employer contribution of 8.33% of your salary, central government also contributes 1.16% of employees' monthly salary under this EPS scheme. So, employer is contributing and the government is also contributing towards this scheme, which is helping the employee to cope up with the expenses after his retirement. Here, the meaning of the salary means basic plus dearness allowance. Here we are taking only those two criteria, that is basic and dearness allowance. Whatever the amount comes, now say for example the basic is 3500 and say dearness allowance is 1500. So say 5000, on 5000 or whatever the percentage applicable will be calculated and that contribution will be made to PF. The rule book still sticks to the old salary limit of 6500. Foreign employer and central government contribution. However, in our view, after the new rules, the limit should be raised to 15,000. That means, though they are making, you know, certain amendments, improvising the policies, but the amount, the restriction on the amount, total amount, which was 6,500 earlier, is still 6,500. But then, it is suggested that, you know, with the increasing rate of inflation, it won't be feasible to cope up with such a small fund or such a small contribution. So, to increase the contribution, we need to increase the limit as well. And it is suggested to raise the limit from 6,500 to 15,000. So, the contribution amount which is being deducted is more and the fund which will be accumulated will in turn be larger. You will not get any interest on your EPS contribution. That means you will get interest on your EPF contribution, but whatever is being transferred to EPS, that is employee pension scheme, where government is already contributing to the fund, so therein you will not get any interest. When employees get the pension, superannuation to avail such pension, you must complete 10 years of service and your age must be 58 years. That means there are some restrictions when you want to withdraw your EPS amount. So here they say that minimum number of years of service is 10 years and the maximum the age limit which they have defined is 58 years or above. And employee can continue his job while receiving his monthly pension. That means if you are continuing your job maybe within the same organization or any other organization, you can receive the pension amount from the EPS scheme, but at the same time you will be also allowed to continue to your job, but then there will be no further deductions to the EPS account. However, he cannot be member of EPS and hence no more fresh contributions to EPS. So, here the worker is allowed to work even after the age of 58 years, even after the withdrawal of EPS fund, but then there will be no further contributions made towards EPS. Early pension. To avail such pension, you must complete 10 years of service and age between 50 years to 58 years. To avail such early pension, an employee must not be working. So now, in the earlier case, you have withdrawn your EPS after the age of 58 years, wherein you were allowed, you were working, you were allowed to work and at the same time you get the pension. But if you want to avail for say early pension, that means before 58 years, it is still allowed. But then the minimum criteria is you should have completed 10 years of service and you should fall between 50 to 58 years. But in this case, you won't be allowed to work anymore. That means you should not be working and you should only enjoy the pension which is coming. So here these are the criteria. Death of an employee. Employee is eligible for EPS if death occurs as below. Features of IDLI, that is Employees Deposit Linked Insurance, all employees who are the members of EPF are automatically eligible for IDLI. That means if you have enrolled for the EPF scheme, you are eligible to the IDLI scheme. The life insurance coverage is irrespective of death occurred during working hours or non-working hours. So this insurance, though it is to safeguard the employee worker, but then it is not only restricted to if there is any death occurring, it is not only restricted to workplace or working hours, it is irrespective of workplace and working hours. It covers the death of an employee irrespective of cause of death. Whatever may be the reason of death, it will be covered under this scheme. There are no exclusions under this plan. Coverage and premium will be purely based on your salary but not on age or gender. So your coverage means the lump sum amount which will be paid under this scheme will be totally dependent on the salary, the base salary, and it will not be considered or age or any gender. So through EPF scheme or EPS scheme or IDLI scheme, here we are trying to safeguard to the social objective of the employees, provide them security and a mind of relief wherein they can plan their future, and they are relieved that they will be taken care of, their dependent will be taken care of in case any unnatural death arises. So somewhere we are trying here to create a happy workforce, satisfied workforce who can work efficiently, productively without any worries. Thank you.